trình phát thanh dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa tổ quốc.
Vừa bình ấy anh đi về.
Chương trình phát thanh cho đồng bào Việt Nam. Chương trình dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa.
Welcome to the Hot Podcast, where Vietnam laughs with the world. I'm your host, Nghĩa Mai. What's going down in Australia? What's a gypsy with a mortgage? In this episode, we go down under and catch up with Aussie comic and fellow podcaster, Fergus Neil, about all things Australian, including his story with Joshua Wong, the Hong Kong protest leader. In addition, our panelist Derek Nguyen show us his attempts at integrating into mainstream Australian society since moving there, and how he got that weird accent. Let's go down under.
All right. Good day and welcome to a special episode of the Hot Podcast. This week we're going down under, going to Australia.
Australia.
Yeah. Just the accent. You gotta have the accent. Anyway. First of all, I'd like to introduce, our panel for this week. First, we have the, Hui Duan.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Wayne. And, wannabe Aussies, Derek Nguyen.
I do. Okay. Thank you. I concur, I guess.
And last but not least is our special guest for this week, our resident Aussie comic and the host of the Fergus Neil Show. Please welcome Fergus Neil.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
And before we move on, so that's one little rule we always do for this episode. So we have a zero tolerance policy on puns. So the idea is that if you attempt to make a pun, you will have to mute yourself for 1 minute. So that applies to everyone except for the host.
Oh, really? Really?
Right. So our first session is to do with Australian English in general.
Oh, Ferg, you're gonna be a lot of Aussie, oh my god,
Aussie interpretation of. Yeah,
he looks like my brother.
Yeah, so we're gonna watch. We're just gonna watch this little video. So this guy Nick Cummings, rugby player, but he's known for like being extra Australian. Everything.
Set piece, but I'll take any meat that's on offer, mate.
If I end up getting a gig, mate, I'll be going off like a cut snake.
Now, the word on the street is, from hearing from the crowds, it's you're tough as woodpecker lips. What would you say to that?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of big who was getting about. When the start of this season turns up, the boys will be, going off like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, mate, oh, buddy, like a rat up a drain pipe, one of them runs there, but sweating like a gypsy with a mortgage, actually, when he got up after scoring that try. You know, this time around, I was just thinking, I'm going to get out there and just go bananas, and I didn't.
Mate, look alright. Having a win, mate, against the Chiefs. When we're back on our line here, and we're D'ing like, buddy, like the boys in the trenches in Gallipoli there. Well, we're not. Is it that kid that fell out of the tree? He just wasn't in it.
This guy's
like
the power
a comedian
of 10.
Writing joke. He's like a stand up.
he did stand up. Yes, I feel like. But like fucking hell, like he got the power of 10,000 tradies on him.
That guy is probably a cousin of mine from somewhere in the comments. I have some family members like that. Well, I don't understand what they're saying because they're so broken. A lot of it's in Queensland.
Oh yeah,
it's like in the north of Australia they speak like that. In the south Australia, not so much. But bull in a china shop is just like, you guys know, like a china shop, like china, like ceramics and stuff. Yeah. And what he's saying there is when a bull goes into a china shop, the bull's going to absolutely destroy everything. So for instance, like if you say he's a bull in a china shop, it means he's going to like, I remember once some guy was like, oh, can we invite Tim to the party? And someone's like, don't invite Tim. He's a fucking bull in a china shop, which means he would destroy the party.
Wow.
Gypsy with a mortgage.
Is that gypsy a real thing?
Now, that's because gypsies don't have homes.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah. So that's pretty fucking funny. Not politically correct. Hilarious.
This is a safe space, Ferg. It's okay.
I reckon it's because gypsies don't own houses. So if a gypsy had a mortgage for a house, they wouldn't know what to do with it. So they'd be stressed. So when he was saying, I'm as stressed as a gypsy with a mortgage. Yeah, I get that. It's pretty funny. And then tough as a woodpecker's lip. That is,
very visual.
I feel like that's universal, isn't it? Do you guys?
Yeah, like I think like you would read it and you would be able to understand it. I've never heard the phrase before. I've never heard the expression before. But
yeah, I think it's just a lot of these phrases. They're pretty common, but I think with the accent.
Yeah, that's like the Australian cadence is very like it's like drunk. Whatever, any other ethnicity when they're drunk, they sound Australian. And then Gallipoli is just like a war that we lost. I think you can say that.
Yeah.
So when they're in the trenches, they were stressed out, I think as well. Yeah. There's something about Gallipoli that Australians love, even though, we got our asses kicked.
Everyone loves wars, bro.
Yeah, maybe that's something in like the national consciousness of every country that people refer to wars that they're people.
Like nationalism of sort, yeah.
Yeah. Win or lose often. It's like we're either celebrating or commemorating.
Yeah. I mean, you guys lost to a bunch of birds, so.
Yep.
The emu.
Yeah, the fucking emu. A dude declared, that's the most Australian thing I've ever heard. Uh-huh. Second Australian thing I've ever heard. The most Australian thing I've ever heard. There was a guy in Australia who tried to start his own country because he didn't want to pay taxes. So he drew a line around his property. And if you wanted to enter his property, you had to show your passport, and he had a stamp, which he would stamp on your passport. And he called himself the Prince of, it was like of Nastasia or something. It was some name that he named it. And the government tried to like come at him, and he won like nearly every court case that they threw at him, and he died really happy, like 90 years old. It was hilarious.
Oh my God. So he didn't pay tax. He didn't do anything. He just lived in his on his property with like a fake border that he drew.
As you went in, it said you were now entering the territory of, I think it was Nastasia, he called it. It was some weird country. And yeah, he was a wheat farmer, so he didn't pay taxes for 40 years. He's like, nah, mate, I'm not paying fucking taxes. I'm just going to start my own country.
Well, I mean, he's still got export and import going around, so good on him. Good on him. This country is run on agriculture, my friend.
Everyone, a lot of Australians in need. When Australians don't want to tell you what career they're doing, they just say import, export.
That's fucking everybody. Are you a gangster? No. Import, export. Cocaine, specifically.
Can I ask a question? I'm interested in that. When I was in Vietnam, I was interested. What's the drug, like, crimes? Like, if you have drugs in Vietnam, is it, like, jail?
Death sentence. If you,
death!
Yeah. If you smuggle like a certain amount of heroin or cocaine, yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Look,
it depends who you know.
Yeah.
That's a big thing as well. It really does depend who you know, because I know people that, you know, even like human smugglers are now taking like, what, 20 years, 25 years, and not even a lifetime sentence, shit like that. It's very weird.
And that's how you got to Australia, right, Derek?
Yeah. It's my cousin, bro. He brought me here.
Yeah, with all the, all the condom, all the Vietnamese condiments.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Just going in one big, just one big pack, one big bag.
Oh,
and was like, what is my, what is it, Nick, ma'am?
And also drugs in Vietnam is very ambiguous. Like the drug scene in Vietnam is very ambiguous.
Yeah.
Like you have weed, which is, you know,
Because I was walking through Hoi An and a guy came up to me and he's like, he offered me marijuana in a bag and I kept walking along. And then this person who was selling Vietnamese street food was like, don't buy, that guy's an undercover. Don't buy, drugs from him. And I was like, holy, I wasn't going to buy drugs, but I was like, holy shit. That's wild.
Yeah. Oh man. Like you would be able to like in Vietnam, shit like this would happen daily. You would be sitting down, like having a cup of coffee or like a cup of tea, and there would be a drug bust right in front of you. And you know how, like in Vietnam, you have like Xe Ôm, which is like you know, motorbike taxi. Cabs. Yeah, motorcycle taxi and shit like that, right? Mm-hmm. You would be looking at this like person that's very normal. He has like a very beat up bike, and he does that for a living. Seems like having your cup of tea, and like one moment he was like chatting shit with you. The other, like, literally 2 seconds after, he's, like, running after a drug dealer and just pinning him down on the ground, and he's undercover, and I'm just like, shit like that happens daily. Like, it's fucked. It's so weird.
I would always think about Australia is like the luckiest British prisoners, you know, because you guys got the sunshine and everything.
We are the lucky. My great-great-great-granddad stole a handkerchief in London, got put on a boat, and woke up like 4 days later. They took the bag off his head. It's fucking like crocodiles and shit. Can you imagine that? How wild that would be?
You fucking...
Yeah. There's this like museum, Australian museum. You go and you put your family's name in it. It says where you came from. And she was like, holy shit, he stole a handkerchief in London. And they're like, see you later, mate. Tell your story fucking walking.
Fucking hell. You stole a handkerchief and you woke up in Florida. Wow.
That's some Lemis shit right there. Yeah.
Oh, man. Imagine that. Like, what, take a loaf of bread and then they send you halfway across the world?
Or maybe because the king did not understand one of your jokes, so now they just send you to Australia because of that.
Nazi Germany got a lot to learn.
Oh,
I'm so sorry, but
oh, come on, Jesus Christ. I mean, I guess those those refugees, those migrant camps, Australian migrant camps are kind of similar to concentration camps in a way. The one where they keep all the asylum seekers. You know.
Oh fuck.
I am so sorry this conversation started by me. I am so sorry.
You started it.
I know.
Can you imagine? I reckon if you're on a comedy stage and you criticize the Vietnamese government, if they had a policy where they transport comedians to Australia on a ship, that would completely eradicate the problem of free speech in Vietnam.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We would bloom here, the Vietnamese comedians.
I feel like there are a lot of, in Australia, Arne Doe's the most famous Vietnamese Australian comedian.
Yeah.
He'd be in the top, maybe top 10 famous Australians.
Yeah.
I went to a show in Melbourne. Yeah.
Did you? I've never actually seen him in, he's so famous to the point where he's actually famous in Vietnam as well. People in Vietnam know him, not famously,
really?
But know him.
Yeah. I remember watching him going back to Vietnam and doing like one of those travel show.
I've seen that as well.
Yeah, the one, there was a bit where he's like, he would disguise as like a cyclo driver and just driving around like tourists. And yeah, every now and then you bump into like an Aussie tourist and he would speak to them like in broken English. Oh, so the thing about Newcastle, yeah, I like the new Newcastle Dragon, the Bogan. And all the Aussie like, oh my God, it's Ando.
Oh my God.
Bogan, like, love Ando as well. Bogans love Arne Doe. Like, they, Australians love him. They seriously, they're obsessed with Arne Doe. They love him. Which maybe is why Australia has like, I reckon like a lot of people want to travel to Australia. A big part of that is because Arne Doe introduced Vietnam to Australian audiences, I reckon.
Yeah. Like, Arne Doe is such a good, like, representative of like the Vietnamese culture because you know him as a refugee. Like, he came here as a refugee, but a lot of people hold grudges against Vietnam, as time moves on, but he doesn't. He's just like, I'm Vietnamese. I'm just gonna, you know, hold on to my own heritage and I'm just gonna introduce myself and my country to, you know, whoever comes on. And, the women are beautiful. That's why you have a lot of tradies coming to Australia, to Vietnam.
Yeah. I mean, that's, hence the title of his memoir, The Happiest Refugee.
Yeah. He's a great ambassador. His comedy show is great. He did a whole comedy show where there was like a PowerPoint behind him and he would show different points of his life. So it'd show where he was born in Vietnam. He'd do a joke about the place where he was born. Then he'd do a place where he got on the ship in Vietnam. He'd do a joke about the ship where he landed in Australia. He did a joke for every place he went. It was so good.
That'd be amazing.
So have you guys done stand-up in Vietnamese in Vietnam, or is that like an abstract concept that occurring?
I did stand-up in Vietnamese, yeah. But it's still, like, it's very hard because you have to see, like, the audience, and then because of the language, so, like, we have to be very careful of how we talk to the people, and sometimes you have to read the room because, you know, there could be some undercover cops there, so.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you can do stand-up in Vietnamese, but still, like, I think because, like, you know, like, it's not like English comedy, because like English comedy has been developed so well, so like there would be a lot of references that a lot of people would get around, so that you can just use that kind of references. before Vietnamese stand-up comedy is still very fresh. You know, but I think during the Vietnam War in the South, there were a lot of stand-up comedians that were performing in Vietnamese. I think so, yeah. And after the war, they fled to the United States. Yeah, there were some guys doing
comedy stuff. From a boat.
Yeah. Boat show.
That's called doing a cruise ship.
That's quite interesting. Just the whole bit of the way Australians speak and with that, we're just going to move on to Derek. He's gonna do a little presentation about his time, about his Australian experience.
That's a good photo. That's a good montage. I like that.
That's actually a set in Vietnam. It's not even here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seven Fridays.
I can actually see Minkus.
Minkus is, I think, like, we all know the Vietnamese boy, all know him. Yeah. He actually went to school in Sydney.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think he went to university in Sydney, and he worked in IT, and he's one of the craziest, like, Vietnamese comedians.
Nutcase.
He has this, yeah, basically a nutcase. Like, he has this persona where he just, like, wear, like, cop uniform on stage, and he got into trouble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
He wear, like, really? Cop and military uniform on stage, and because he's
Yeah.
Is he famous?
It's not famous, but he's
among the community.
In Melbourne, there's so many crazy comedians, but that's pretty. I don't think I've ever heard of one dressed up as a cop going on stage. That's pretty next level insanity.
Yeah,
in Vietnam.
Yeah,
that is a felony.
Yeah, I love to be in the audience for that. I love when weird shit happens at a comedy gig. I live for it. It's so good.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that he speaks like Borat. Yeah, like, his English is good, but the funny thing is, it just sounds like Borat. You know, like, I think he was doing a set.
I want to see this guy do a set. Is he on YouTube or something?
I think he has a few clips on YouTube. Because he's also a musician. He plays the guitar, so he would write funny songs. I remember one time I was watching him and he was just talking about, like, how white women taste like chicken.
Oh, I remember this one. Oh my God. I remember this bit.
I like white women.
Oh my God. I actually remember this bit because I was in audience that night, I think. I remember this bit. No.
And funny thing, he actually has a white girlfriend, so, you know, I don't blame him.
We all do, brother.
Wow.
Derek, just give us a brief summary of, like, why did you choose Australia and how did you get there?
Okay, I'm just gonna, like, be very straight with you guys. Australia was not my original plan.
Oh, I'm keen to hear. I'm interested in that, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, so what it was, I was doing software engineering in Vietnam, in this university called Bach Quai University, right? So it's prestigious in quotation marks. I fucking hate the university. And I was like, look, I'm probably not suitable for this education, you know, environment or whatever. I'm tired. I need to go. My first option was go to Wellington, New Zealand. And I remember very vividly, I think it was 2016 or 2016, December 31st, 3 p.m. I was just stoned as shit, drinking coffee next to a lake. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'm going. And I'm going to Australia. I'm not going to New Zealand anymore. I'm going to Australia. And that was it. Like, I went to Australia 2 months after. All the paperwork, visa, admission to university, everything. Like, everything happened in two months from 31st of December and almost 3 months. And on the 26th or the 25th of February next year, which is 2017, I'm on a fucking plane.
Wow.
And I never looked back. Yeah. It's very much like a very spontaneous thing. Like, I didn't even plan it out. I'm like, I came here with no money whatsoever.
Wow.
True.
You landed in Melbourne?
Yeah.
All right. So, and when did you start doing gigs?
No, I think I started doing gigs, I think October that year.
What made you want to do it?
Cause I started comedy when it was in Vietnam, right? And I was like, I've always wanted to do more comedy in like a more, you know, diverse scene. And Melbourne is probably one of the hardest scene, like comedy scene in the world. And I was like, I was just bored and I'm like, I want to do this. I haven't done it in like a year or two cause like, you know, I moved here and all this shit going on. And I was just like, let's fucking do it. So I started at Voltaire. I just showed up. And I remember the first gig at Voltaire, I was drunk as shit. I was like, I haven't done stand up in so long. I was so nervous. I think I had like five Coronas or six Coronas. And I remember I was taking a piss upstairs. You know, like, you know, like where you have like the wooden stairs upstairs, Kirk? Yeah. I was taking a piss up there and I don't remember who introduced me. One of the Asian boys. Oh, I don't remember which one. They're all the Jamil? Same to me now. No, not Jamil.
Okay, that's all.
One of those ones.
Oh, Randy, like, Randy.
Randy, yes, Randy. Yes, yeah. Randy introduced me. And Randy was like, oh, next comedian, Derek Nguyen. And I'm like, I was on the way down from the stairs. I was so drunk. I poked my head through the, you know, the curtain from the stairs. I poked my head through the curtain and I'm like, I am so fucking drunk. Please wait for me. I will come down. And I bombed that fucking set. I bombed so hard. Holy shit.
Oh, I wish I was there for that.
Love a good bomb.
I think, yeah, I think you were. And then you, I think you, you took off early. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of people just like finish off their like gig and then just go to another
club. You just bail. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that was, yeah. But that was my first gig in Australia and it went badly.
It always, the first one has to go bad, I reckon. Almost to motivate you to keep going in a weird way. Like if it, I've seen people do good and they like go, oh, I can do it. And they don't do it for a few months, but the people you see kind of bomb, it's almost like they're like, I want to get back out there and kill it. So like that's almost like a motivation to get better.
Yeah.
And I feel like for me, most of the time, it's just like, sometimes I'm just sad as shit. I'm like on the tram, just like, I fucking hate my life. And then I just write jokes and it works, you know, sometimes it's like, either it works or it doesn't, but it doesn't matter because like you're here to push yourself a little and make people laugh a little and every single small things that you do, you know, it is very rewarding in some ways. It's not just like a competition with people. It's like a competition with yourself of sort.
Yeah.
But
deep boys.
Deep. But so like when you got to Australia, like how much interaction do you have with the Vietnamese community there?
Oh,
impression of it.
Very little. Very little. Because I've always been a very
we've been there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a very I would say whitewashed. That's the word that a lot of people is used for me because I've been like speaking English for a long time now. And most of the like, even when I finished high school, it was because I started working in like language schools, like, you know, like the ones in Vietnam where people teach English, right? Yeah. So most of my like adult friends were from abroad. So I didn't get to know a lot of like the Vietnamese community. Because also one of the things that I realized or the rule I set for myself is like, you know, like, oh, like you're leaving the country to find something new. Why would you even like bother going back to your own bubble if you were like gonna spend this much time of your life rebuilding your life overseas just to speak Vietnamese or just to eat Vietnamese food or this and that. Like my Vietnamese community, like interaction with the Vietnamese community came way later. I think like half a year to 8 months later when I started working in like as a cook in one of the Vietnamese kitchen restaurants in Preston. So that was it. And then it started to grow. And now I know some people, some students, Vietnamese students. And I, Ferg, man, I will take you to this food truck and it's amazing. I know the guy.
I love Vietnamese food.
Oh man. We did meet at a pho joint.
We met at a Vietnamese restaurant. That should be a good reflection
yes,
on.
Yes.
I think that was when I said, you know, I'm like, there's a really good pho place like around the corner. And everyone's like, really? I'm like, oh, it's good. And then we went in there and then everybody could speak Vietnamese, even the white people. That's how you know it's a good Vietnamese restaurant. Like the old dude, he looked like he was like a bogan dude. He spoke it fluently to Derek.
Yeah.
I was like, and sure.
I was
like,
so shocked.
I want to know this guy's story. And he grew, he lived in Vietnam for like 20 years or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like he married, like, so they moved back here. And the wife is the, she runs like the restaurant and he's like, probably he owns the place or whatever. That is such a bizarre. And that is a very common, you know, dynamic, from like some of the couples as well. Like, you know, like you have Vietnamese or like Asian spouse and then you move back to your own country or whatever. And then most of the times you open up a restaurant. Like, I know a lot of people like that.
All Vietnamese know each other somehow.
Yeah, it's pretty much true. This is a crazy story, right? When I first moved to Australia, the first house that I moved into was right, literally opposite, literally, like you walk across the road, opposite to my high school friend.
Whoa.
I shit you not. Yeah.
So like, you both come out at the same time and then like,
no, so the case was like, was this. So I, right before, I think a week before I moved to Australia, I did not have a place to stay. So I panicked and I went on like the forum or like the Facebook group or whatever. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to pick whatever because I'm probably not going to stay here for long. I picked that one and she's probably the only person I know in Melbourne that is in Melbourne. And I'm like, hey, can you go check out this house for me? And if you can you like, you know, put a bond on it and I will pay you back, when I get over there. And then she did. And she's like, she takes me back like 15 minutes later. And she was like, I think this house is the one right across the street from mine. And it was so fucking crazy. And I thought she was fucking with me. And then I moved there and then I texted her and I'm like, okay, so where you at? And she came out of the door as I got off the taxi and she was there. And I'm just like, I haven't seen you in 4 years. And here we are, neighbors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. Insane.
Yeah, I mean, like, even me and Derek, we even have a mutual friend too, right, Derek? Like,
We have a lot of mutual friends and we've never met each other.
Just like crazy.
It's crazy. It's like, you know, the Vietnamese version of 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Oh, sort of like, because, you know, I studied history and, you know, I look at like, all the Vietnamese, all the historical figures and just tracing them, like they all, somehow they all knew each other, either via, you know, familiar relations or it's marriage and it's just, all creates this connecting the dots, you know, it's just.
Like it's true. Cause like whenever I go back to my hometown, my dad's hometown for like a family reunion. So you know how like Asians have a lot of, like relatives and shit.
Yeah.
The total amount of people in that family, in that branch of the family, is 4,000 people.
Whoa.
I have about 3,999 relatives.
Oh, that's how many.
It's fucked. It's so many people. It blew my fucking mind.
Also, because I think historically the emphasis was on the surnames, so your last name mattered more than your given.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're always going to meet people of the same surname, the same. It's very common for like, you know, Vietnamese families to have like website dedicated just the branch, just the clan, because it's very kin, you know, it's so like clanish. The clan, you know, the kinish kind of real relation, you know, to the point that you have your own website and they basically cooperate on the family tree. So, you know,
Like mine even printed books.
Yeah, printed books. Yeah. Family records.
It's so it's crazy because like they would print like, you know, family trees. They print the lore. They print like folklores that started the family. Like mine would be like, a general got stranded and shit like that. And I'm just like, what the shit? Like, are you?
That is
real?
Amazing. Yeah. I was like talking before about my family stealing the handkerchief, and you're talking about general.
Is it true that Melbourne used to be called Batmania?
Yeah, it did, because the guy who, it used to be called Batmania.
I mean, know like, there's a guy called Batman, but...
Yeah.
Batmania.
My train station used to be called Batman Station.
Yeah. There's still a Batman park around Fitzroy somewhere, right?
Because the guy who, I don't know how, apparently actually he got this nickname because there used to be someone who would deal with bats. Or so like if you had a bat problem, this guy would come. And in like, I don't know if it's the same in Vietnam, but in like Anglo-Saxon culture, it's like your surname represents what you did as a living.
Yeah.
So for instance, if your name's Taylor, your family was a Taylor. Smith, your family was like a Smitty, stuff like that. Yeah, John Batman did something to do with like dealing with bats or something. And it was called Batman. So they called Melbourne Batmania when it first was settled. Yeah. It's wild.
Well, I think it's because you were talking what are similar to in like Anglo-Saxon countries. I think in Vietnam, a lot of surnames, they tend to be, so they originated from like China like thousands of years ago. Because the name were written like in Chinese characters.
For clans, yeah.
But yeah, so because Vietnam thousands of years ago was part of China. And back in the day, like Vietnamese people didn't have surnames. So it was like the Chinese, it was like for tax records, the Chinese decided to give surnames, you know.
Yeah.
Is that history between China and Vietnam? Is there rivalry there between China and Vietnam?
No, we are friendlies.
It's very complex. It's sort of like, you know, like kind of like, I think the equivalent of the English and the Irish.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. That's great.
Yeah.
That like nailed it on the head for me conceptually.
Vietnam and China, the emotional capacity of the two countries is like Melania and Trump.
Like totally.
You kind of have to stick together, but you really hate each other.
Okay.
So totally. I think it stems from back in the, like way, way back, like thousands of years ago. Like China has always tried to like invade, the South. Which is Vietnam, right? Yeah. And, they literally attempt an invasion every probably, 50 to 100 years? Very consistent throughout the last 4,000 years, like 3,000 years. Very consistent.
Holy shit.
Every century, they try to do some shit. They just try to pull some shit. The most recent one was in 79.
Even 88. I think even 88.
Yeah, that was
88. China invaded Vietnam.
Some of the islands. You know, there was one big battle in 1988, and that was kept classified for a while.
We need to cut this out.
Yeah. Don't worry. I mean, we're gonna have a lot of footage by the end of this. You know, just,
oh man,
we're gonna have an unedited version for OnlyFans and Patreons and
OnlyFans. Oh man, but yeah, it's like that's what I mean when I said nationalism is very important in Asian countries, like in Vietnam and shit.
Yeah.
We were kind of like, you know how people sometimes systemically, I don't know the word, but sometimes they got like things programmed in their head just from a very young age. Sometimes slap people in the fucking face is bad. Same thing goes to Vietnamese people. Like Chinese is bad. Like for some fucked up reason. Like I grew up knowing that as a fact. And for me to like re-educate myself to think that, okay, I go to China and I'm like, people are so fucking nice and their food is so fucking good.
Yeah.
But the government, like the way they run the country and their ideology behind it is a bit fucked. Not a bit, but it's kind of like fucked. Either way, it's like, it's so deeply ingrained in like the nationalism of Vietnamese people. Without any justifiable, well, it's justifiable, but like we don't know that. We just like, it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, like even right now, Australia is having some tension with China, right? Because even you guys have your own story.
You know, Joshua Wong, the leader of the Hong Kong protest movement, he follows me on Instagram. He follows me on Instagram.
What? Yeah,
so like he looks at my story.
Be very careful.
Can I tell one crazy story?
Please do.
So what happened? This guy who I went to uni with, he's a journalist at like one of the biggest papers in Australia. It's called The Age. You know, Derek, The Age.
Very big paper.
Yeah. So he works there. So he was like, I didn't know Joshua Wong followed me. He's like, hey, Faye, do you know that Joshua Wong follows you? I was like, who the fuck's Joshua Wong? He's like, he's the leader of the Hong Kong protest movement. I'm like, this is fucking sick. And he's like, can you message him and get him to contact me? Cause we want to do an article on him on Australia, Hong Kong, China relations. So I was like, fuck, all right, I'll give him a message. So I message him. It's seen like 2 minutes in. It just pumped up. Joshua Wong sees it. He replies. I'd get them in contact. Front of the Age paper, my friend Paul, you can go check out the article. Paul Suckle writes an article about Joshua Wong telling the Prime Minister of Australia to sanction China. So I nearly caused a war.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Holy shit. Holy fuck.
Crazy.
Holy
this
shit.
This is good content.
The fucking, so the missile. The missile really
gotta go
Australia.
Fucking back.
Oh my it's God. It's got my face on the missile. Yeah.
You basically almost brokered an international incident.
Yeah. I tell that story to Australians and they don't care. Like they don't.
Yeah, who the fuck is Joshua Wong? Wow, yeah.
That is.
They don't
big.
Know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow.
That's
yeah.
like I'll the fall you, of democracy big.
If you make a clip of this, I'll at Joshua Wong and see if he'll see it.
Please do. Please.
Oh my God.
But again, we're all going to get fucking arrested, man. Let me tell
you. Oh, dude. I was doing a stand-up show and I told the Joshua Wong story on stage. This Chinese guy gets up and he's like, ah! Hi! And I'm like, I was on stage, like, what the fuck? He's like, shut the fuck up! Like that. And I was like, bro, calm down. Like he was standing up like that. It was at a university gig and people were like, stand down. His friends were like grabbing him. And I was like, this is crazy. And then my friend,
the mainland people are very sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mainland people.
You know
what,
damn, he's his friend who's crazy. He's a comedian. He's on next. The room's tense. And he starts going, he's like, what's the Hong Kong national anthem? I'll sing it. And like the whole, he was like going at them as well. It was wild. Wildest comedy gig ever.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
You mentioned Joshua Wong to an Australians have like a very Australian lens. Like you mentioned Hong Kong to Australia, like Hong Kong, like it's not really an awareness of what's going on overseas.
Yeah.
It's
I think
why.
It's more like a tourist attraction, Hong Kong, more than anything. Yeah.
People would go on holidays to Hong Kong and be like, there's a civil unrest there. It's like, fuck, like you didn't see the pepper spray in front of you. Like it's very weird. Australians are very good at turning off. Their eyes.
Mm. And also, like, cause I feel like in Australia, a lot of the time, like, all the papers and all the news networks are very polarized. It's very filtered.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Like, the news there is like, kangaroos running through the shopping mall. And that's news.
Yeah.
And then, like, North Korea threatened to bomb the shit out of the rest of the world. Like, that is not news.
It's so weird. So yeah. Weird. The media is bizarre. Yeah.
Can I come over?
But, anyway, so I think, I think we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was great.
I never wanted it to end. I learned so much.
But,
oh, man.
Yeah, awesome.
It's so fun.
Cool.
It's been great, boys.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. So good. All right.
All right. I'm going to get some food.
Yeah.
All right. Do.
See you.
Good night, guys.
See you, boys.
Bye. I'm gonna go get food too.
Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to follow our social media for updates and other cool stuff. See you next time.